Morning. If you'd like to follow along this morning, we'll be from the book of James. I'll be reading chapter 1, beginning in verse 19. I'll be reading from the NIV. Your Bible may say something a little different. Again, James chapter 1, I'll be reading verses 19 through 25. And it reads, "My dear brothers, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. For man's anger does not bring about the righteous life that God desires. Therefore, get rid of all moral filth and the evil that is so prevalent, and humbly accept the word planted in you, which can save you. Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says. Anyone who listens to the word but does not do what it says is like a man who looks at his face in the mirror and after looking at himself goes away and immediately forgets what he looks like. But the man who looks intently into the perfect law that gives freedom and continues to do this, not forgetting what he has heard but doing it, he will be blessed in what he does."
Good morning. Good to see everybody. We're going to kind of do the third of this list of habits, godly habits that I would really encourage, especially those who are younger, to try and develop in your life. Because as James says there, by the doing of these things, we are blessed. It's not just the hearing of them. It is good to hear them. It is good to be taught. It is good to understand. But if we do not do them, it doesn't have the effect that God ultimately desires for us. And I just kind of reminded us of the first couple I've talked about. And I've been choosing. I have a long list of habits, I think, that are good to develop. But I started placing them in at least what makes sense to me in terms of developing good habits. And that is learning to work well, to work diligently and work hard, not to overwork and not to make work your idol and not to make the money that comes from work the thing that drives you, because that's not the point of work. So even if you have plenty of money, God still wants you to do work in the sense of being productive with your time. You know, almost every day of our lives, and for the Jews, they were commanded 6 days. They would work. They would be productive. And then they would actively not work for a day. Most of us probably don't do that very often. And we don't rest as God taught them, that we don't purposely put aside all the to-do lists, all the little chores at home, all the little things that we ought to do, you put them aside. Even good things to do, you know, cooking and making food for the family, don't do it, he said to them. He said, take all the to-dos and set them aside. And actually, I think I kind of remember this with three R's, the rest that God taught them, which was to rest, rejoice, and remember God. That was the purpose of taking time, and that was all done with your family, not just by yourself. It wasn't an isolated individual thing. It was a family thing to do. And so today we're going to talk about what, I guess I put them in my, I'm not sure if importance is the right word, but if I'm like, because I think seeking truth rests on the ability to work. I think learning and growing, all of those things rest on your ability to work. That's why I put it first. But today we want to focus on the idea of seeking truth. And that is really critical to walking in godliness. And so we're going to look at a couple of passages here. And I want to start from a passage in Jeremiah. And in this passage, God is talking about how he is going to destroy Jerusalem. And Jeremiah, you know, was his prophet for 40 years in that city, telling them of this coming destruction. But it wasn't going to change. It wasn't going to not happen. Jeremiah was even prepared at the beginning of his calling that God was going to give him a miraculously hard head so that no matter how much they resisted and were stiff-necked and didn't want to hear it, he was just going to keep telling them what was coming. And so in verse 1 of chapter 5, he says, "Run to and fro through the streets of Jerusalem. Look and take note. Search her squares to see if you can find a man." Not just any man, but a man who does justice and seeks truth. Those are very active things. And the idea of seeking truth, and we'll probably come to justice and the idea in the future, but seeking truth is not simply waiting for it to arrive in at your doorstep and going, "Oh, well, this is really cool. Truth came to me and now I know." Like, well, that's really interesting. No, seeking truth is an active way of trying to find it. And one of the things about this that I think is so important, especially in the modern world and social media, one of the things that Facebook started doing about 10 years ago, 11 years ago, is they created algorithms to get you to see it, to look at the feed more often. Because the more time you spend going through the feed, the more the ad sellers give them. The more money they make, the more time you spend. And the more you linger on a specific ad and looking at it, the more money they make. And so their entire algorithm is designed to get you to spend more time with your eyes looking at the screen. And so what they did, and this led somewhat to all of the kind of hoaxes and a bunch of stuff that's happened in the last 5-6 years, one of their algorithms is to get you to kind of read the next thing. If you see an interesting article and you read it, well, they'll give you another article like it. And they'll take you down the rabbit hole of all those things. So if you have like a specific thing you like, a specific, you know, if it's a political thing, you know, if you're really right or you're really left and you like to read political articles, they're going to feed them to you. But they're not going to feed you both sides. They're going to feed you the ones you agree with. They're going to keep feeding all of the opinions. It might be true, might not be true. They don't care because that doesn't matter to them making money. All they're trying to do is get you to spend time in front of the screen so they can make money. And they are very, very knowledgeable on how to get you to do that. And even when you know it, even when you understand it, that won't stop it. Because you can, it's like spices, right? You can know, oh, that's really spicy. Is that, you knowing something's really spicy, is that going to not make it taste spicy? And so you need to understand that the world we live in is full of lots of information. Some of it good, some of it bad, some of it indifferent. And because there's so much, it's harder to find that which is true within it. And so it is really important that we become truth seekers, searching after answers. Like the Proverbs tell us, they warn us from just listening to one side of somebody. A friend comes to us, our family comes to us, and they tell us a story, and we go, "Oh man, I can't believe it. Can't believe that person would have done that to you." And it's like, well, you were so right to get mad at them. And then you hear from the other person who, and they tell you, and you go, "Oh, well, I didn't hear about that part. I didn't hear that side of it." And you're like, huh, That might not be as cut and dried or as clear as I thought it was. And that's just the reality of life. And so to be a truth seeker means to be open and willing to listen and hear as in fact, Paul wrote to the Thessalonians, we need to be willing to test all things, but hold fast to what is true. And so that idea is not an easy one, by the way, because all of us are inclined to our biases, to the things that we think or agree with. Already, we're inclined to those. So when we read something that agrees with us, we like that. And when we read something that doesn't agree with us, we're a little, I don't think I like that. And it sometimes takes a long time to undo our conviction if it's wrong. And so confirmation bias is a real problem when it comes to finding truth. And so I give chapter 4, verse 22, just as kind of, this is what they were like. This is why he couldn't find anybody in Jerusalem who was really a truth seeker. And these are people, a lot of them, who could probably quote a bunch of passages in the Law of Moses. But it didn't mean they were seeking truth. He says, "For my people are foolish. They know me not. They are stupid children. They have no understanding. They are wise in doing evil, but how to do good, they know not." Because they weren't truth seekers. They weren't seeking after that which is really real. And we live in a society that wants to pretend that even though you are biologically female, you can pretend you're male. Or if you're biologically male, you can pretend you're female. They'll give you, you know, surgeries to make you look like the other. Doesn't change. Your doctors still have to know what your DNA is, don't they? They still need to know what your chromosomes are, because all the different treatments affect us differently. We can pretend, but it doesn't make it real. And we need to be people. In fact, I've noticed in the last 10 to 15 years or so that I have gotten more and more common, at least in my head, of saying, it is what it is. And it is essentially a reaction to when you're younger, you want to change everything. You want to fix everything. Kind of appropriate when you become a young adult. You see all of the problems in the world. And the funny thing is, there will never cease to be any. You will not fix everything. You might fix some things, and then your kids might mess it all up anyway. So, or you might fix some things and mess some other stuff up. Because that's generally what we do. And as an older adult, I've realized more and more things just are what they are, and accepting them for what they are, you know, and coming to that realization that I can't undo and make the world the way I would like it to be. I need to understand the way it is, and I need to then try to live godly with reality. That's my challenge. That's the challenge for all of us that God has placed upon us. And so think about another passage here in Proverbs chapter 8, verses 32 through 36. This is wisdom. In the first 10 chapters of Proverbs, really, there are two figurative women that are presented in these first nine chapters. And one is an adulterous woman who is enticing you to sin. And one is wisdom calling out to you to learn and to do well and to do righteousness. And so this is wisdom. This is her talking. He says, "Now, O sons, listen to me. Blessed are those who keep my ways. Hear instruction and be wise. Do not neglect it. What does he say to not neglect? Hearing instruction. How many of you like to study? You just like to learn. You like to read. All right. It's good to see you. Little kids like to do that. Few people like to do that. How many of you are like, oh, open the books. Oh, I got to learn something today. Oh. I was blessed that I liked learning. And I enjoy it. And so it's essentially a habit. I get people who even tend to like to comment on the fact that Roger's got this kind of useless knowledge about all kinds of stuff. I've been hearing that for 40 years. but in some ways it's easy for me. And you could think of that as like, okay, I have that gift, and that makes it a little easier for me. Now everybody doesn't have that. So if you don't have that, you don't love it, that doesn't mean you can neglect it. You have to keep learning. And by the way, that's kind of what, you know, 2 Peter 1 is about continuing to grow all the time in life. There's no point at which you should stop growing, regardless of what your body is doing. Because our bodies are going to stop growing, at least in a healthy way. And our bodies, you know, are going to begin to decay and get weaker. Begins to happen a lot earlier than we would like to think. But our minds don't really work that way. Now, they can come to the point where our minds don't work as well, but we keep using them. We can keep growing. We can learn and become more wise through the years. And that's what God is urging us to do. And one of the ways we do that is to hear instruction. And he says, blessed is the one who listens to me, watching daily at my gates, waiting beside my doors. The blessings, we talked about it from James 1. The blessings of doing this. When you do this, there are blessings that come. There's blessings that you reap from that. He says, for whoever finds me finds life and obtains favor from the Lord. But he who fails to find me injures himself. All who hate me love death. If you don't like it, you need to understand that that means it's a challenge. There are certain things I don't like to do that are good for me. And I have to try to build that habit in spite of the fact I don't like it. And so you might be that person. And you might have that to overcome. But it is something you need to overcome. It is important for you to continue to hear instruction. Now, I don't mean in a school setting all the time. I mean just getting information, reading on things. If you're interested in the subject, read a lot about it. Read in depth about it. Grow and learn. Don't just have meme wisdom. So a number of you get that, right? In fact, I can remember years ago, even before memes were a thing on social media, having meme wisdom on posters in an office that we had, you know, about hard work and about, you know, all kinds of different, you know, logos and memes that were good for you to be a good worker for that company, right? But that wisdom is often not full. Memes are kind of interesting in a certain sort of way, and they might have a little basic of truth, but they're like a proverb in the sense that they don't always fit every situation at all times. Sometimes it's not the best course, you know? And so memes are not depth. And in fact, one of the studies that has gone on in the last decade or so, is that people are spending a much less time thinking deeply. Because they are so bombarded with so much bits of information, they are thinking far more surfacely. Everybody, not just some of us, it's just kind of happening to all of us because we have so much information coming at us all the time that we can't just set aside and just sit there and think without information. Sometimes, if you ever have a moment where you just want to kind of take a moment, so I started doing, I became part of a trial, actually, to do mindful breathing. So it's kind of, it's a study that I'm involved in. Involves me taking my blood pressure every day and everything, testing it out. But in this study, I have to basically breathe, think about breathing for 15 minutes, right? Breathing 6 breaths a minute. So every 10 seconds, roughly. And it's hard to do when there's sounds going off. It's hard to do if my watch is like, oh, hey, you got a text coming in. You got, you know, because all these things keep coming at us. Your phone dings, right? All these bits of information, they distract us. And so we don't think, we don't have as much time to think deeply. And that actually is hurting our depth of knowledge. And so just kind of important for you to take time away from stuff and put stuff away to think more deeply and have time to just meditate on subjects rather than just really quickly, you know, dealing with everything that comes your way. This, by the way, this idea of truth, I think, is what Paul is referring to in 2 Corinthians 10 when he talks about the weapons of God's warfare, the spiritual warfare that he is engaged in. Because physical warfare is one thing. It is the battle of physical bodies, and Jesus himself told Pilate, you know, it's like, hey, if my people were of this kingdom, they'd fight, but they're not. That's not the kingdom we are fighting for. It doesn't mean we're not fighting for a kingdom, but we're not fighting like that. We're not fighting with, you know, the body, because I'm not going to win if I kill you and you don't kill me. In fact, I might win if you kill me and I don't kill you. And so the spiritual warfare is very different, and that's what Paul writes about in 2 Corinthians 10, and starting verse 3, for though we walk in the flesh, we do not wage war according to the flesh, for the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but have divine power to destroy strongholds. And so one of the primary weapons is the word of truth. He says, we destroy arguments and every lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God, and take every thought captive to obey Christ. So he uses this kind of battle and captivity language of a battle, but the battle isn't for your flesh. The battle is for your thoughts, for your mind. And he says, God's word, the word of truth, is powerful for this. And it is a divine power. It's not just a human power. But he says, and its power is to tear down a stronghold. A stronghold was a fortified city. Well, that's what we do with a lot of our thoughts. A lot of us have thoughts that we're so sure are right. We have built up a big fortified wall around it. And you can give me information that kind of tells me I'm wrong, but what am I going to do the first time I hear information that implies that I'm wrong about something? You know, because you've done it. Like, I don't think that's right. I really doubt the author of that. That author's probably not any good anyway, and they probably don't know what they're talking about. And so I'm going to make all kinds of excuses and arguments over that first time, that information that comes and tells me I'm wrong. Now, when it keeps coming, if I'm wrong, I'm going to keep getting information unless I'm going to push it away and say I'm not going to listen to it, which people will do. In fact, give you a little kind of side story to this exact issue. When I first met Julie, and Julie, when we first met, had her mother had died just a year or two before. She was raised in a certain religious practice, tradition, and when we first started and we met, and she was interested in possibly dating. We were interested in, well, whether we're going to date or not. Like, well, what do you believe? I mean, you know, we're already 30. We're not in this for fun and games. Like, what do you think? What do you believe? Are we kind of in the same realm here or not? If we're not, I don't need to date. But she was checking me out and, you know, testing stuff out, and we were talking and everything. And I had run into this a lot, studying with people who had been raised in a religious tradition who couldn't accept things the Bible said because it meant their parents might not be in heaven. That's a really difficult thing to do. And I wasn't sure if that would affect her. And it didn't, which really kind of amazed me. But that is one of those things, that's one of those types of situations where we go, no, if you're telling me what my grandma thought wasn't right, I can't accept what you're saying because now you're saying she was wrong. Well, she was just a human being. Being wrong is just kind of part of being human. And so, but that's one of those kind of examples where we sometimes have decided something must be true regardless of the actual information that's out there. And so the Bible is designed as God's power to tear those ideas down, those thoughts down that are contrary to Him, so that our thoughts and our beliefs line up and mesh with Christ rather than are in opposition to Him. And the last one for this idea is in Psalm 51 and verse 6. In this psalm where David is essentially asking God to forgive him and create in him a clean heart because of all the sins that he committed, not only with Bathsheba, but then killing her husband, Uriah, and in hiding it, and everything he had done from the time that he was tempted by her flesh and brought her to his castle. He's asking God in this psalm to forgive him, to have mercy on him, to clean him and purify his heart. But he makes mention in verse 6 of this really important aspect of the idea of truth. He says, "Behold, you delight in truth in the inward being." What is that? Do you have truth in the inward being? Are you honest to the core? Or do you like the little fibs and lies that make everything seem better? We should be honest with ourselves like that. A lot of people like white lies. We like little things that tell us, you know, something, even if it's not true. And so that's unhealthy. It's not good for you. But God, He understands and sees that in us. Do we want to know what's really real and what is true? Not just wanting to know the things that we'd like to know or to confirm what we would want them to be, but are we willing to accept things as they really are and learn and grow from God? And as He says, "And you teach me wisdom in the secret heart." Because it is that desire for truth that is connected to growing wise. If we don't desire truth, and if we're not a truth seeker, we're going to have difficulty being wise. Because what we will be is we will always be what we want ourselves to be, rather than have wisdom to be, understand what is real and what is true. So we're going to end with this one passage where I think Jesus kind of sums up a lot of this. And that really comes from John 18 and 33 through 38. When Jesus was arrested that night, you know, in the Garden of Gethsemane, and he was brought before, you know, the high priest, and they, you know, they investigated him, and he really wouldn't kind of respond to them the way they wanted. But they then send him to Pilate because, as we learn in this passage even, they don't have the ability to kill him legally. Well, I mean, that didn't stop the Jews from killing people, by the way. I mean, they just went out and threw stones at Stephen when they got mad at him, right? Not like the Jews would never have done that. But they wanted, understand this, the Jewish leaders who hated Jesus, especially for all of the convicting he did of them and their hypocrisy, they didn't just want Jesus to be killed and become some martyr. They wanted him executed by the authorities as a wrongdoer. Right? And so they brought him to Pilate. And so Pilate, even before this, is kind of asking them why. They told them in verse 31, it's not lawful for us to put anyone to death. It didn't say they didn't do it. It wasn't legal for them to do it. And they wanted Jesus killed legally. Doesn't mean rightly, by the way. Legal and right are not always the same thing. So Pilate entered his headquarters again, called Jesus and said to him, are you the king of the Jews? Jesus answered, do you say this of your own accord, or did others say it to you about me? Pilate answered, am I a Jew? Your own nation and chief priests have delivered you over to me. What have you done? Jesus answered, my kingdom is not of this world. Now, I want you to understand. So first off, he's asked, what have you done? Because he first asked, are you a king? Which the answer to that, if I said, I'm a king, well, Romans would have wanted to kill him because that would have been seditious to the emperor. But he didn't really answer that question. And he's like, well, what have you done? Why are they bringing you to me? What have you done? And his answer, though, is essentially saying, yes, I'm a king. But my kingdom isn't here. My kingdom isn't like the kind of kingdoms you think of. He says, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would have been fighting that I might not be delivered over to the Jews. In fact, I recently saw a brother quote this passage in a really improper way on Facebook, talking about people kind of arguing and things. And like, well, he used it really poorly out of context. Because we are told to fight, by the way. We are told to be involved in the warfare, like Ephesians 6 talks about, have been armed for the warfare, the spiritual warfare. This passage is talking about actually physically fighting with swords. That's not our war. That is not going to save a soul. If we, shoot or we, use a sword or we kill, that doesn't have anything to do with the spiritual kingdom of God. And that's the point he's making here. He's like, if my kingdom was on this earth, then I'd have all my people come up and we'd start fighting you. But they're not doing that. He says that I might not be delivered over to the Jews, but my kingdom is not from the world. And then Pilate said to him, so you are a king? And Jesus answered, you say that I am a king. For this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I have come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice. One of the reasons that he's saying to us that people do not understand Jesus' teachings is they don't really want the truth. Your desire to want the truth, whether it's something you'll like or you wish it wasn't that way, do you want the truth no matter what, the unvarnished truth and nothing but the truth? Or do you want it presented in a way that you want? And if you want it the way you want it, then you're often not going to like Jesus. You're not going to like God, who's trying to tell us what's really real and what's true. And so the final thing of this, Pilate said to him, what is truth? That is not an actual question. That is a rhetorical question. That's a statement made in a question form. And this question, by the way, that Pilate says here is, in fact, what most of the world, especially in the Western world today, is kind of founded upon. That truth is subjective. Truth changes with the winds, changes with my desires. It changes with my perceptions. And that is untrue. People do it all the time. People want things to be the way they want them to be rather than the way they are. And Pilate was speaking for the world. What is truth? Oh, you say this is true. They say that is true. Ah, who knows what's true? I have my truth. You have your truth. We all have. Well, no. There's what's real, and there's what's really real. And then there's your observation of it. There's your understanding of it. And your observation and understanding might not be complete It might not be full about what's really real, but that doesn't make it real. We need to align our thoughts, our perceptions with what's true. That's what it means to be a truth seeker. And that's what Jesus is talking about. And we'll end here at this verse, but he's telling us that's why he was born, that we could be truth seekers. I didn't even go into John 8, which is a great passage about it, this idea of the truth setting us free. Because the real warfare is that the lies and deceptions of the devil is what is really enslaving us. And the truth is what really frees us. And so that's what Jesus came to do, is to free us that we might live free, not just for a little while on this earth, but for eternity with God. We're going to go ahead and sing a song to close out. I appreciate your time this morning. Thank you for being here. And if you're here today and you have questions about what is true, have questions about the Bible and maybe just issues in your mind, we're always willing. I am, others are. We are always willing to help you search out the scriptures, find what God says about those things. None of us believe ourselves to be the center of that truth. Hopefully just the people seeking it and trying to discover it and trying to illuminate it for you, for ourselves, trying to live it. And if you're here and you need help with anything, any kind of questions going on in your mind about your relationship with God or about practicing righteousness, we'd be glad to help in those things, glad to help in those studies, and we can do that anytime. But if you're here and you need other things, if you're searching and seeking, or if you just have some wants and some needs that are not being met, and we can help in those things, we would like to do that. We're going to go ahead and sing this song. And if you would like to express that to us today, please come forward and let us know as we stand and sing.